When you know that you are queer, but your favorite drink is beer, that's gayish. You can bottom without stopping, but you can't stand going shopping, that's gayish. Oh, gayish, you're probably gayish. Well, life's just too short for narrow stereotypes, so it's gayish. We're also gayish. It's gayish with Mike and Kyle.
Hello, everyone in the podcast universe. This is Gayish,
the podcast that puts the cum in cumbersome.
It's so heavy. Or awkward?
Yeah. Well,
pivot? I don't know.
Pivot!
I'm Mike Johnson.
I'm Kyle Guest.
We're here to bridge the gap between sexuality and actuality. And
today,
we're going to talk about them bunnies.
We're going to talk about Playboy.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Playboy.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
You're going to love it.
And we're going to figure out if it's gay or not.
Yes.
There's anything gay about it.
Or we won't.
Or maybe we won't. Only you can decide at the end of this episode what we actually did.
You won't believe number four.
Exactly. I don't
know. Okay. But first, here's the news.
Shut your mouth hole. It's time for your ear holes. News. News. News.
Kyle, every time we have nothing to talk about at the top and we go right into the news, I feel like it was abrupt.
Oh, I don't know how to help you there because we've done it so many times.
Okay. Well, news the first.
Okay.
We
can invent things to talk about.
Well, isn't that what podcasting is?
That's literally all that podcasting is. That's true.
Okay, you know the Log Cabin Republicans?
Yeah.
Okay, they're having a fundraiser, and it's been announced that the host of this fundraiser is going to be Melania Trump.
What?
Yeah, missing in action, perhaps a robot, maybe got Avril Lavigne'd. Melania Trump is going to be the host.
Wow.
Yeah. So there have been lots of articles written about where is Melania. She like basically is just persona non grata. Is that a phrase? What does that mean? It means something.
You're not allowed somewhere.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or yeah. But people are like, where the fuck is she?
Yeah.
Where has she been? Her dickbag fuckface asshole husband should maybe like wheel her out more often because like people don't hate her nearly as much. But
I don't care. Do you?
I don't care at all. Do you? God, she's anyway. We should have some version of those like made into t-shirts, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the Log Cabin Republicans apparently got her somehow to like host this fundraiser, which
it's a good get.
And yeah, it's a good get. And I don't understand, like, okay, if you were down with gay people, and I don't even know if this indicates that she's down with gay people, but I kind of think it does.
It implies that for sure.
Could you like, I don't, what is her game? What's her angle? 'Cause I assume it's bad.
I mean, everyone's wife is cool with gays, you know, like the women are presumed to be more accepting of gay people. It's the women, especially like those in media and whatever, are down with gay people because they do their hair and makeup, you know, like, so I don't know. That seems to be the angle here.
Well, according to Politico, she has long maintained a close relationship with the Log Cabin Republicans. In 2021, she was a special guest and received an award at a dinner that the organization hosted at Mar-a-Lago. And despite the horrible, horrible shit that her husband has said about trans people, especially on Trans Day of Visibility, which was Easter. We talked about that last week.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to do this thing. I just... Log Cabin Republicans, what are you doing?
How do you still exist?
Yeah. Why are you a thing? I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay.
News the second.
Great.
The United Nations Human Rights Council has adopted a resolution that supports the rights of intersex people.
Oh, cool.
It's the first time that it's done that. The resolution was titled Combating Discrimination, Violence, and Harmful Practices Against Intersex Persons, or could have a hup-ipe. It recognizes that intersex people exist in every society and that they, quote, may face multiple and intersecting forms of discrimination in all areas of life, such as access to education, health, employment, sports, and social security, as well as restrictions on the exercise of legal capacity and in access to remedies and justice. There is this whole thing about, like, when we don't talk about it that much, but worldwide, intersex babies are, like, operated on.
Yeah.
Like, to quote unquote fix them.
Yeah.
When like a lot of intersex folks will tell you like I didn't I need fixing.
Yeah.
And quite often they end up having a strong gender identity of some kind that's the opposite of whatever surgery that they received. And then they're like extra fucked. Yeah. So
it's like genital mutilation on babies.
Yeah. It's not medically necessary until it is. So don't presume that there's a problem and that you need to fix it, you assholes.
Right.
Anyway, I think it's very, very interesting.
And like most UN resolutions, it did nothing.
Right. Well, you know, yeah. Yeah. It has been standard practice since the 1950s to do surgeries on these people, which are irreversible, risky, and medically unnecessary, according to a press release from the Human Rights Watch. They also say that 1.7% of people are born with variations in sex characteristics. I think it's really interesting, and I hope it does do something, Kyle.
Yeah, that's true. That was very pessimistic of me.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks, UN.
Yeah.
And news the last. I love this story.
Okay.
So Evan Lowe is the name of a gay man who's running for Congress. He's currently in the California Assembly. He is running for Congress in the 16th congressional district, which is like Silicon Valley. He is gay and hot. So California has a top two primary, meaning the top two vote getters move on to the general. This is the very first time since adopting a top two primary that three people are going to the general because two people tied for second.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. The primary was held March 5th. Cutie patootie Evan Lowe tied for second place. He and Joe Simishian, who is a Santa Clara County supervisor, each got 30,249 votes.
That's wild.
Like
one vote did make like would have made a difference in that election.
Exactly right. So some grinder hookup should have gone to the polls and didn't. And now Evan Lowe has to run against two other people in the general. But I just anyway, it's wild.
Yeah.
One vote can make a difference.
Yeah.
Especially for gay Congress.
Yeah.
So
that's what I call my hookups in gay Congress.
I hope he wins. Oh. Also, I wish I could find more pictures of him shirtless.
Not readily available so far?
No. I mean, there's some, like you can tell there's a body under there.
Mm. But
I like that. He's also super, like, young. He was the youngest Asian to be in the California Assembly so far. He was first elected to the California Assembly in 2014 at age 30. Making him the youngest Asian American elected to the body up to that time. And again, that was 10 years ago. So he's 40 now, and he's a fine looking 40. I'm just going to objectify everybody, Kyle. You know me.
That's perfect.
That's the news.
That's the news. Speaking of people I want to objectify, I would want to objectify our new Patreon members, but this week we don't have any.
Oh, no. Well, I guess we're done.
I guess the podcast is over.
If nobody wants to support us anymore,
yeah,
we'll just take this as our sign to ride off into the sunset.
If you want to make sure we don't ride off into the sunset on that dusty trail, on that long goodbye.
Hey.
Hey.
You may or may not have gotten a tax return. Send it to us.
Oh, yeah. Give us your money. If you want to support the show, get ad-free episodes a day early, get bonus content, bonus episodes, use Mike's hole to mm-hmm. say 100 words, mm-hmm. get discounts on
use
merch.
Kyle's hole to say your name wrong.
That's true. That's true. Everyone that signs up gets to use my hole.
Use our holes.
Sign up for Patreon at patreon.com/gayishpodcast.
Do it or I'm leaving.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Playboy?
Let's talk about Playboy. This was my
This
fault.
Was your doing. Yeah. Yeah. Why did you do this to us?
Well, we probably should have talked about it when he died.
Oh.
But, like, I just have been thinking a lot about Hugh Hefner lately.
Really? Okay.
And I really, there's like a correlation and correlation causation, or there's like a pot kettle. No. Chicken egg. Cart horse. There's a thing that I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know if, like, Playboy and Hugh Hefner is the reason that we have toxic masculinity or just the beneficiary of it. But like, I think it's undeniable that Playboy has like made a huge impact on our culture and our society, maybe in ways that we didn't even realize. And like, it, some of it's bad.
Yeah. And toxic masculinity plays into homophobia. So is that the gay connection?
I found lots of gay connections that I'm pretty excited about.
Okay.
But that's not necessarily one of them.
Okay.
Although, well, there's lots of lesbians hate him and hate the magazine and feminists too, for reasons.
That makes sense.
First, have you ever read a Playboy, Kyle?
I have not.
No, not even for the articles.
Not even for the articles. Not a single time.
Okay. Well, you should.
Should I?
I don't know.
Okay. Have you?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Someone very close to me in my life that is my dad had Playboys, and I would read them.
So
secretly.
But you would really would steal them for the articles, because you clearly weren't in it for the women.
Correct. And the occasional teeny tiny sliver of like dude representation that I would be into.
Right? Yeah.
Or I was trying to convince myself that I would be into tatas if I just saw more of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was trying to straighten myself up.
Yeah.
By exposure therapy or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. My closest memory to this, because I feel like everyone has like, I saw my dad's Playboy, or I found a lot of straight dudes have like, I found porn in the forest.
Yeah.
Which is such a weird, I've never found porn in the forest, but finding like a magazine or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So where I grew up is like on the banks of an irrigation canal, and that like makes agriculture happen in that part of the world. And it has a road that would follow it. And we would walk up and down that road all the time in high school, like just, I don't know, adventures or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Found gay porn on the banks of the canal one time, and then it for sure disappeared, and I know who took it. And we're all, the whole group now is, we're all gay. So anyway,
my closest experience with this is my brother once took a Sears catalog.
Ooh.
And he and I looked at it in his bedroom in the closet and looked at like the underwear.
Yeah.
You know, section.
I mean, I was into the underwear section. I suppose straight boys would also be into the underwear section.
Yeah. 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 Just
different underwear.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was doing this like, well, this is my brother, so I'm kind of tagging along.
Yeah.
Even though I was not, you know, didn't really care. It was just a cool thing that he and I were doing together is how I saw it.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk to you about the history of Playboy.
Okay.
Do you know when Playboy started?
1976.
Great guess. It's very wrong. Playboy was founded in Chicago in 1953.
Ooh, wow.
So it's been around for 71 years. It's only online now, which I didn't realize. In 2020, it had its final print issue. And I think that maybe that would have been bigger news if we weren't doing something else on March 17th of 2020.
Other news going on at the time.
Yeah, a little bit. But it was founded by Hugh Hefner. And it's interesting that he's an interesting cat, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he's controversial. And there's a lot of different opinions out there. And this is one of those times when I'm like, I'm afraid of talking about him and having people be like mad that I was too supportive or something.
You're worried about saying good things about him?
Yeah.
And he's about Playboy?
Yeah. He's a complicated dude. And but I think that there's like, I don't know. He wasn't Hitler, y'all.
Right.
Anyway. So he... He was going to start. He graduated from the University of Illinois in 1949 as he had a psychology degree.
Hmm.
And he worked in Chicago for Esquire magazine, writing promotional copy. And he had planned out doing his own magazine that he was going to call Stag Party. And he founded a publishing company, got a friend named Eldon Sellers to help him out. And they went out and found other investors. And he raised just over $8,000 for a first run. And his mom loaned him $1,000 as part of it. So there was another men's adventure magazine called Stag, and they somehow caught wind of the whole thing and got a hold of him and said, look, we will sue you if you release a magazine called Stag Party. So that's when they were trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to call this thing instead? He was married to this woman named Millie at the time, and they considered Top Hat, Gentleman, Sir, Satyr, Pan, and Bachelor before Eldon Sellers suggested Playboy. So the first issue that came out in December of 1953 had no date on it, and it's because they didn't know if there was going to be a second one.
Oh.
And they made it in his kitchen.
Can you imagine if it was called Pan?
Right.
Would we have pansexuals? Would that have taken over the word pan?
Well, now you're making me realize that Pan was the name of the satyr, the flute-playing goat boy.
Oh.
That liked to bang.
Oh.
But Pan is also a Latin root that means, like, all of
everything.
It.
Everything, yeah.
And I don't know if they're related or not. Now I want to. I'm pretty sure that they meant the goat boy.
The goat boy. Okay.
But maybe in an alternate universe, Playboy is called Pan and pansexuals are called Playboy sexuals.
Hit us up, Pan people, if you want to be called Playboy sexuals instead.
So here's where the problematic shit starts, Kyle.
Okay.
The first centerfold was Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
Printed without her permission. They had purchased a bunch of photographs and Hefner chose what he thought was the sexiest one. And, she didn't say it was okay.
Hmm.
Like it was legal. She didn't really have any recourse, but that was not a consensual centerfolding. She was not called the Playboy Bunny though. That first one, it was the Sweetheart of the Month, to begin with. Anyway, the first issue sold out in just a couple of weeks, and it was 53,991 copies at a cover price of 50 cents, which if you have one of those in your garage somewhere, it's worth more than $5,000 now.
Wow.
So
sell it on eBay.
Find Grandpa's porn, everybody.
Yep. Everybody dig around for your grandpa's porn. That'll be a fun adventure.
That's how they got started, right? They didn't have full frontal nudity until the 70s. There has always been this question of whether it is what the meaning of porn in our society, especially as it pertains to women and objectification, and whether it represents exploitation or not. What's interesting is that they had this whole, Hugh Hefner had this whole thing that he called the Playboy philosophy. And a lot of it was around the image of man and masculinity and what it meant to be a man. And a lot of it was based on like this strong, silent type behavior. There was a New York Times article that was written just right after he passed away, which was in 2017, but Hefner's the New York Times said, quote, "The masculine ideal of the era was narrowly defined by Hefner: aloof, outdoorsy, a breadwinner, manly. Showing too much of an interest in culture, fine food, or travel was anathema. Mr. Hefner felt trapped by conformity and designed a magazine that promoted a very different idea of what made an individual a man through its features and advice on clothing, food, alcohol selections, art, music, and literature. And though it quickly became a cliche, many male readers really did read it for the articles."
When you put it like that, it sounds like trying to develop a full, well-rounded human.
That was at least what they said they were trying to accomplish, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of that, though, is sort of undermined, maybe a little bit. Give me your reaction. This is from the very first edition. The very first magazine had a letter from the editor. That's Hugh Hefner. And it says, quote, "If you're a man between the ages of 18 and 80, Playboy is meant for you. If you're somebody's sister, wife, or mother-in-law and picked us up by mistake, please pass us along to the man in your life and get back to Ladies Home Companion." Oh. "Within the pages of Playboy, you will find articles, fiction, picture stories, cartoons, humor, and special features culled from many sources, past and present, to form a pleasure primer styled to the masculine tastes. Most of today's magazines for men spend all their time out of doors, but we don't mind telling you in advance, we plan on spending most of our time inside. We like our apartment. We enjoy mixing up cocktails and an hors d'oeuvre or two, putting a little mood music on the phonograph, and inviting in a female acquaintance for a quiet discussion on Picasso, Nietzsche, jazz, and sex."
Hmm.
I don't know. What do you think about all of that?
Man, there is a mixture of it still trying to promote a different way to be a man, which is a good thing, mm-hmm. to provide alternatives to what masculinity means. That's what I think we try to do, is provide alternatives to what it means to be gay, to mm-hmm. be a man. But the just starting off with like, hey, women, this isn't for you. If you looked at this by mistake, like,
yeah,
go off and do your own thing, like that. That really sets a tone at the very beginning that's exclusive.
Absolutely. And I totally fucked up the intro to this, rolling into this. He was trying to change what he viewed as being a too narrowly defined masculine ideal. Mm. So I think I misspoke and said that he said these things. He was critical of these things. That at the time, men were supposed to be aloof, outdoorsy, the manly breadwinner that had no interest in culture, fine food, or travel. He wanted to change those things.
Got it.
Which I think I support. Like, let's expand the definition of what it means to be a man. But just as you're saying, to do that and say, like, ladies, go away.
Yeah.
That's also a vibe that I don't know that I can get behind.
Yeah, and there's also a difference between your stated goals and, like, and how did you go about achieving that? And do those things line up? Because your vision can be very different than your execution.
Yep. Yep. Anyway, there's a lot more to talk about. It evolved, as a lot of things do, into more about the titties and then in the 70s, full frontal, just full on porn. And I'm going to talk later about the impact that they had on the gay rights movement and some surprising early things in early Playboy, where it intersects with gay culture. But I'll pick that up in a little bit.
Okay. So, interesting.
Yeah.
I have some gayda.
Okay. Hit me.
Hmm.
All of them. Every dude has seen porn.
No, not it. But that's an easy gayda that we could have. I'm going to tell you about the thinness and body shape of Playboy centerfolds.
Oh, okay.
So this is an article or a paper by P.T. Katzmarks.
Mm-hmm. Good work.
And C. Davis, 2001 International Journal of Obesity.
Okay.
Their goal was to evaluate the changes in weight and shape of Playboy centerfolds over the past two decades. So at the time, they looked at 1978 to 1998.
Oh.
See how it changed.
I was born in 78.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. I guess I could have known. Well, okay. What was my guess? Yeah, okay. Anyway, they obtained measurements from 247 centerfolds. Mm-hmm. They obtained their BMI and waist to hip circumference ratio.
Okay.
Well, you don't like BMI?
I don't. Well, I mean, you know how I feel about BMI. I think it's absolute horse shit, and that's just math. But whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. But it is some kind of measurement that they can use to compare how people have changed over time.
Yep. Yeah.
The results were there was no change in BMI or waist to hip ratio in centerfolds over the past 20 years.
Okay.
I would have thought that it would have gotten thinner and thinner.
Yeah, me too. Especially like like it for men, it's been the opposite or whatever.
What?
Like women, like hot chicks have gotten thinner and bigger boobed, and that like hot dudes have gotten bulkier and more muscular over time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's not true.
I mean, at least in Playboy, that is not true. They also found that based on BMI, 70% of the centerfolds were underweight and 77.5% of the centerfolds were less than 85% of their ideal body weight.
Wow.
So the conclusion that this article comes away with is that this is one of the social pressures placed on women to be thin, and explains the high level of body dissatisfaction that women have, and disordered eating among women.
Okay.
That's kind of a leap from, like, I don't think it did a good job of connecting those two directly.
Yeah.
Proving that there's a connection between that impact on women. But that's what they took away from this.
There's this whole weird space of like, you do a thing and that's what sells. Is the fact that that's what sells your fault or not?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, like, if you're creating it, then kind of.
There's also like a opportunistic part of me that's like, well, if it wasn't you getting that money, somebody else would have, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Humans are terrible, and selling things that make their terribleness happy is a thing. Like,
yeah,
there are people who make cigarettes and people who make booze and people who sell sex, and like there's,
and yeah, I think you can't put the blame on the people that created it, even if someone else would make booze if you didn't, like, but you still got to blame the people that are creating it, like that are creating cigarettes.
Okay.
I think I think on Patreon I have another Gata.
Ooh.
That I'll tell you about.
Ooh.
And it's about
secret Gata.
It's secret Gata. It's called What Sort of Man Reads Playboy?
Ooh. Okay.
So I'll tell you about that on Patreon.
Straight.
Oh. Yeah, there's just one bullet under that, and it just says straight. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I want to tell you about the Crooked Man. Have you heard anything about the Crooked Man?
No, not at all.
So interesting, I think. So, The Crooked Man is a short story written by Charles Beaumont. And it's a sci-fi story.
Hmm.
Where it's a world in the future where the majority of the population is gay and heterosexuals are persecuted.
This is the premise of the podcast that I love called Gay Future.
Yes, it is. Exactly that. Exactly that. And so heterosexual men are persecuted, and this whole plot around this dude who is straight and he's into this chick and he has to like pursue her on the DL because homosexual correct society was frowned on that kind of perversion. Like it's really interesting. And so this guy had tried to get Charles Beaumont had tried to get this short story published in a number of publications, including Esquire, which, as I mentioned, Hugh Hefner had a relationship with Esquire. And it was turned down over and over and over again. And Hugh Hefner said, I'll publish it in Playboy.
Hmm.
I will put this story in my magazine. And what's interesting is that he did that, and it appeared in 1955.
Wow.
This story about like, what if the whole world were gay and they treated straight people poorly.
That seems so early.
It is super duper early. It's super early. It's, you know, almost 15 years before Stonewall. The House Un-American Activities Committee is like full on,
investigating people.
But like, what's that called? The Pink Scare is
the Lavender Scare
is full on happening. You could end up on the list of enemies, which he also, by the way, Hugh Hefner was on the list of Nixon's political enemies. He like kept a literal list of people that he was like not happy with, and Hugh Hefner was one of them. Anyway, he published this story in 1955 and got a whole bunch of hate mail. Like, people were not happy about that. And the magazine was only 2 years old at that time, or even less than that. And so he couldn't really afford to piss off his readership.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of like retracting it or apologizing it or whatever, he, in the next issue, wrote a response that said, quote, "If it was wrong to persecute heterosexuals in a homosexual society, then the reverse is wrong too."
Hmm.
So he, as again, in 1955, was like, I'm trying to make a statement. I'm letting this person have a platform to make the statement that, like, what we're doing to gays is wrong.
Wow. Who knew that Playboy was a pioneer for gay rights?
Yeah. Yeah. It absolutely is. Or like, like, however you want to feel about the porn industry and Hugh Hefner, like, he definitely did this.
Hmm.
He said, quote, "I published it first and foremost because I thought it was a good story." This was an article that he, an interview that he did with The Advocate in 2010, gay magazine, The Advocate.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "But I was well aware of the fact that it would be perceived as controversial because Esquire had already turned it down. At the same time, I was obviously aware of the fact that it would be controversial and, as we discovered, in some corners misunderstood. Some people felt it was homophobic." But I just can't get over the fact that, like, that was a big risk to take. And he...
especially for being so new of a magazine.
Being so new and the political climate at the time. And the Advocate asked him more questions, actually, about, like, why did you behave like this? And the Advocate was like, why were you an early supporter of the gay rights movement? Or why even dip your toe into that world? And he said, in the late 50s and early 60s, one of the big challenges was there were a bunch of laws about what you could and couldn't send in the mail. And sending pornography in the mail was strictly prohibited. So they had to work on, like, what counted as pornography and what didn't, and how could they hide the magazine in a way that it wouldn't get picked up by the postal service, like all of this stuff. But he said that a lot of the censorship of personal mail was just critical to Playboy's business model. But at the same time, most of the victims were gay men. That the stuff that gay men were sending each other was what the Postal Service was really trying to crack down on and stop. So it sort of became strange bedfellows of, by fighting for the right for his magazine to exist and be sent in the mail, he was also championing a big problem for gay men at the time. He said, quote, "We were involved in a series of cases, court cases, and got some gay people out of prison."
Wow. I didn't realize this was an issue for us.
Yeah.
This is like a thing that I just never was on my register of something we had to fight for, our right to send mail to each other.
Yep, absolutely. And, yeah, it's super interesting. He also said, quote, "The most outrageous laws were the sodomy laws, the abominable and detestable crimes against nature, and they included homosexual and heterosexual acts. Anything other than procreative sex was criminalized. Now you and I know what crimes against nature are, and if any, they don't include consensual sex acts."
Hmm.
And so that was just another space where, like, he was trying to promote sexual freedom and saw laws against gay people as being, you know, on some philosophical level, the opposite of what he wanted for the world. So he fought for us too.
Yeah. It's interesting how intertwined their fates were in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm.
And yeah, it's really interesting. His philosophies are sort of, again, I understand the problematic nature of the implications of some of the things that he believed, but like, we kind of are the benefactors of it in a weird way.
Hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. That's The Crooked Man, though. 1955, printing this story, and then I read the story, and it was really interesting. I didn't expect such like queerness to come out of that era, but you read through the story and you're like, it's not like it's aged well. It still makes sense. And like, it doesn't feel backward or primitive at all.
Huh.
It just, anyway. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. I'm going to change it up then to kind of further expand on that by talking about, there's this article that discusses Playboy's impact on gay men.
Okay.
So when Hugh Hefner died, there was on Huffington Post, an article written by Mark Olmsted, so in 2017, called Hugh Hefner's Legacy from a Gay Male Perspective.
Okay.
And so he says that Hugh Hefner commoditized the male gaze and that he challenged sexual repression at the time. And so this is a quote from the article. When Hugh Hefner proposed that men stop feeling bad about the primacy of lust in their thought process, he may have been talking to heterosexual men, but gay men heard the message as well. Mm-hmm. It enabled us to grasp that whom we were attracted to gender-wise counted less, experientially speaking, than the way we were attracted to them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I think that's wild and probably true, right? Like, if you're the person that's saying, regardless of your sexual orientation, your inner thoughts about sex aren't dirty or perverted or bad or wrong for society. That's like, especially at that time, it's a pretty ballsy, groundbreaking, revolutionary thing to say or think or do. And so, like, hey, straight guys, it's okay to think about titties. It is not a far step from that to, okay, gay guys, it's okay to think about cocks, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if we're giving him too much credit. Now that I know that his views on gay people, though, were good, especially back in the time, then maybe I can give him a little bit of the credit. I was wondering if that was giving him too much credit for advancing the gay cause. But maybe it is. Maybe he did.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
This, that cart, horse, chicken, egg.
Yeah.
Correlation, causation, whatever thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Playboy actually help deconstruct people's sexual repression in a way that helped advance gay people? And I don't know. Maybe there's just parallel timelines of things happened in the same, or maybe it did actually directly impact it. I'm not sure. Another quote from the article, the lifting of the veil of sexual shame for homosexual men was an essential predicate to the gay liberation that followed. So it is giving Playboy a little bit of the credit for gay liberation that came after it. And I don't know. I think the sexual revolution did play a role in advancing our rights, and did Playboy contribute to the sexual revolution?
And it was definitely the leading edge, right? Like, we think of the sexual revolution as being the 60s and 70s, and this magazine started in the mid 50s or early 50s. So, like, it's definitely, whether it was a cause or not, it definitely preceded and was on the leading edge of the shit that was happening in the culture.
Yeah.
So whether it deserves the credit or not, it makes sense to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm worried about that we're talking about this too positively.
Yeah.
Because most of what people would think about it, this article specifically was like, let's try not to be too reductive about it is just flat out bad. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely bad things about it, that its impact on women and the seeing them as objects and just there for your enjoyment, like that dressing them up in little outfits and having them be bunnies is like kind of demeaning. So there's a lot of negative things that this magazine did.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, and do you remember the show with the bunnies? The
House Bunny or the Girls Next Door?
The Girls Next Door.
Yeah, I used to watch that.
Yeah. I mean, but talking about this, we've had a couple of conversations, at least off the air recently, about whether poly people count as queer or not. And Hugh Hefner has been like poly, whether he would use that word for himself or not. That's like his behavior sure looks poly, right?
Yeah.
And that show chronicles his, like, he has a primary girlfriend and he's got other girlfriends on the side and they all know about it and they all mm-hmm. live together and have this, like, life. Like, that's, if we call poly relationships queer, that's pretty fucking queer.
Yeah.
This dude is, right?
Which is weird. Oh, I wonder if he would define himself in that way.
Well, I
think it's only now that we're even reflecting on whether poly people belong in the queer community or the LGBT community, or, and so maybe I wonder if he conceived of himself in that way.
Well, I can tell you some things that he did conceive of himself as.
Okay.
Before I do
wow,
that,
what a
though,
good transition. Oh.
Well, okay. First, I wanted to talk about this thing that I thought was hilarious. One of the people that was not a fan of his was Marcia Ann Gillespie, who was editor-in-chief of Miss Magazine. And she said, quote, "Obviously, he wasn't sufficiently breastfed. He's fixated, like a lot of his readers, on large breasts. The images that Playboy has helped to foster as normal have caused real harm to many women. Those images are partly responsible for women putting silicone implants in their breasts."
Hmm.
And I think that's super interesting.
Yeah.
But as far as like what he thought of himself, this advocate interview that he did, this is an earlier one. He was in the Advocate multiple times, but this is an interview that he did in 1994. And, the interviewer asked, "In doing research on you, I discovered that you've alluded to having had homosexual sex." And his response was, "In the context of heterosexual swinging, yes. Really, bisexuality."
Hmm.
But then followed up and said, "So on the Kinsey scale, where would you place yourself?" And he said, "Very heterosexual."
Oh.
Then they asked, "Do you think it's perfectly logical for a heterosexual man to engage in a homosexual act?" And he's 94, Kyle. And he said, "If you are sexually adventurous, then I don't think heterosexuality should preclude you from trying whatever's out there."
Wow.
And they said, "Is it really that simple for you?" He said, "It's that elementary." They said, "Do you realize how revolutionary that thought is?" And he said, "Of course I do. The thing that is most remarkable to me is that those thoughts were obvious to me when I was very young. I saw the opposite, the narrow-mindedness, as one of the great sources of hypocrisy and hurt, real pain in our society. There was this article on youth in Life magazine. It was actually the theme of the issue. It came out in 1939. I was 12 or 13 years old. In that issue was a story of a couple who, in their teens, were going together and were intimate, and the woman became pregnant. She was terrified to tell her parents. She read aloud to her boyfriend from Romeo and Juliet and talked him into killing her and then himself. A double suicide. He shot her, then himself, but he survived the gunshot wound. Later, he went on trial and was convicted of her murder. I didn't see any difference between what happened to that couple and what happened when a young person felt shame, isolation, and guilt for being attracted to a member or members of the same sex. The inability to share our humanity with one another is the real tragedy. However it manifests itself, sex is just a natural expression of our humanity. It's so stupid that some people can only accept what is natural to them."
Hmm.
Fucking interesting.
Yeah.
But he's like, "Yeah, I've banged dudes. I was swinging, and it wasn't for me. I'm very heterosexual, but yeah, that's
Did
happened.
He bang dudes? Is that your take on that?
So he said, "You've alluded to having had homosexual sex." And he said, "In the context of heterosexual swinging, yes."
Context of heterosexual swinging. So he's been with another couple, like a couple with a couple, right? And maybe he did stuff with a dude.
I don't know. Like,
I don't know if he fucked a dude.
"Have you had homosexual sex?" And he said, "Yes." In the context of heterosexual swinging, yes.
But the
really bisexuality is what he said.
Okay.
But then it goes around and says, like, on the Kinsey scale, I'm very heterosexual.
Yeah.
But I think that whether we had the vocabulary for it at the time or not, I think that he would have readily accepted the label as of poly.
Mm.
I don't have any notes that say that he ever used that term for himself or not. But my gist of him suggests that he would have been fine with that as a term.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, I think Brosif was pretty queer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I would not have expected that from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
and seems pretty down and nonchalant to, when he's talking about it. Like, it doesn't come across as him having any like anxiety about any of this. It just seems like it's very natural to him.
Yep. And he also said that he was comfortable speaking to the Advocate because he almost never gave interviews, but he did for the Advocate because he saw a kinship with the Advocate and his work. Like, he really viewed himself as a culture warrior, whether you agree with the culture he was trying to make or not.
Yeah.
And really thought that freedom to do whatever you wanted to, it was what we should be fighting for.
And I mean, if we break down intent versus impact, I think his intent, I'm realizing, was all very good and positive, and it seems very healthy. Yeah. I don't know that the impact was that.
Yeah. And there's also then this question of like historical context, right? Like, is moving the needle in this way, the way that he did it in the early 50s, does he get credit for the time frame?
Right.
Like, I think there's I worry about how our podcast is going to age, Kyle. Like,
oh God.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
20 years from now, what are people going to like think about the things that we've said? Or
I mean,
thought?
Our early episodes, I know they haven't aged well. they already haven't aged well.
One more thing about this interview, that he gave to the Advocate, a gay magazine, if everybody wasn't already aware, it's a gay ass magazine. They asked him, do you have any gay friends? And he says, I have friends that I later discovered were gay. They were not friends that I was involved with in a sexual way. I don't really ask other men what they're into when I meet them. It doesn't really matter to me. I care much more about their politics. They said, you've known openly gay people since the 60s? Yes, but I just don't think of them in terms of their sexual preferences. They said, that's interesting coming from the founder of Playboy. And he said, it's like, do you have any black friends? I mean, I don't think of them as black. I was raised in a home in which those distinctions didn't exist. Bullshit, Hugh. But my mother never got the implications of discrimination regarding sexual preference. So when I did see that sort of bigotry in my parents, it was traumatic for me, horrendous for me. I mean, I couldn't even comprehend the concept. I don't know. That's just, I don't know what I'm saying.
It feels very, I don't see color kind of thing, which I don't love that.
Yeah.
Take.
Yeah. Oh, this is where I wanted to go with this though.
Yeah.
They were asking him about like, what do you think about what the right is trying to do in this country? Mm. Again, this is the 90s. He said, when I was younger, I thought that the sexual revolution was over and we had won. Well, we certainly know that isn't true. We're still fighting for the same rights, abortion, gay rights, that we were fighting for in the 50s and 60s. Now I think it's always going to be two steps forward, one step back in these arenas. The 80s clearly were a backlash to the freedom gained in the 70s. I see a lot of the 50s in the 80s. It's an ongoing battle, really, that's built into the psyche of the country. It's the founding fathers, their Puritan ethics. The right seized upon AIDS as some sort of evidence where we as a society had gone wrong, had become impure. The only thing wrong with AIDS is the way our government responded to it. They are culpable on many, many levels. And he's just fascinating to me.
Hmm.
His, like, he has a philosophy, he has a vision,
yeah.
And it keeps coming out in weird ways. And then, like, you talk about impact versus intent.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think that his intent seems at the very least philosophically pure.
Right.
And consistent. Fascinating dude.
Did you know that he was this fascinating? Like, did you know this about him before you picked this topic?
No, I legit wanted to do an episode about Playboy, and I wanted to talk about how it, like, I think formed a lot of straight dudes' self-concept.
Yeah.
And was just this like horrible libidinous cesspool or something. and to discover that it's actually much more nuanced than that and has all of these intersections with gay culture and gay rights, I didn't anticipate that at all. So it's been really interesting.
Huh. We actually learn stuff on this podcast,
I guess. Yeah.
another intersection with gay stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you about Burtman Rock.
Okay. That's a name you made up.
That is a real human.
Or a cartoon character, maybe?
It's a cartoon bird. No, it's a human. It's a human influencer. I wrote down, Playboy started in 1953. Mm-hmm. I wrote that down.
Great.
I should have looked a little bit further in my notes. I read an article on NBC News by Matt Labites in 2021.
Okay.
And the, as you mentioned, Playboy went digital in 2020. Three men have appeared on the cover of Playboy.
Okay.
Hugh Hefner.
Great.
Bad Bunny in 2020.
Okay.
That's a little surprising, right?
Yeah. Also, he was dead by that time.
He was dead by that time. Yep. And Burtman Rock. Burtman Rock is does makeup tutorials on YouTube. He has 17 million Instagram influencers. He has his own beauty line. He has starred in his own MTV reality TV show, and he's gay. Burtman Rock said about him being on the cover, "For Playboy to have a male on the cover is a huge deal for the LGBT community, for my brown people community, and it's all so surreal. A total, is this even fucking happening right now? Type of vibe. And I'm so pretty."
That's great.
Anthony Allen Ramos from GLAD praised him being on the cover. He said it is, quote, a powerful step forward in an ongoing movement towards greater diversity and inclusion in fashion and modeling. Mm-hmm. There other big milestones just to note is that another beauty influencer, Victoria Volkova, became the first trans woman to appear on a cover of Playboy Mexico.
Wow. Okay.
And in November 2017, French model Inez Raoult became the first openly trans Playboy playmate.
Wild.
So they've had some gay and trans representation, including on the cover.
I wonder how front and center they were about the transness of those people, though, right? Like, there's a lot of trans women that are just fucking gorgeous.
Yeah.
And, like,
And how open should they be? Like,
right.
When
right.
you
right.
put a cis woman on the cover, you don't, like, put, you know, in italics below, woman, comma,
right.
cis.
Yeah,
like,
right. yeah.
you know, it's not... yeah. you. So I don't think they owe anyone anything.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting.
Yeah.
I did read that the magazine is trying to change its image because they've looked at the numbers and Gen Z will not buy their magazine if they don't make serious changes to it.
Mm.
And I think it was in the context of this YouTuber being on the cover. They're like trying really hard to be less gendered, but also still have boobs. I don't know. It's weird.
Huh.
They are aware that what they represent is sort of a dying conservative way of viewing the world and are trying to update themselves so that they don't become irrelevant and fold.
That's so hard given how, like, what their brand is so iconic and has such a connotation to it when you say it, like, you know exactly what you're talking about. So to try to change that must be a big undertaking.
Yeah, absolutely. But it kind of makes sense too, right? Like put a gay male YouTuber on and call him a bunny. That's directly in this strategy of like, let's work on updating our image.
Oh, right. Is that why they did Bad Bunny?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, because he's a bunny. I didn't make that connection.
Do you want to talk about the bunny?
Sure.
I mean, the Playboy bunny has been around for almost as long as the magazine. But they were like, why a bunny?
Mm-hmm.
And Hefner said, quote, "The rabbit, the bunny in America has a sexual meaning. Oh, and I chose it because it's a fresh animal, shy, vivacious, jumping, sexy. First it smells you, then it escapes. Then it comes back, and you feel like caressing it, playing with it. A girl resembles a bunny. Joyful, joking. Consider the girl we made popular, the Playmate of the Month. She is never sophisticated, a girl you cannot really have. She is a young, healthy, simple girl, the girl next door. We are not interested in the mysterious, difficult woman, the femme fatale, who wears elegant underwear with lace, and she is sad and somehow mentally filthy. The Playboy girl has no lace, no underwear. She is naked, well-washed with soap and water, and she is happy.
That's an interesting take on what a woman should be.
Right? Yeah. There's, maybe he wasn't breastfed enough. Like, but this idea that like rabbits fuck like rabbits, yeah, and that's the symbol for the magazine. That logo has a rating of 95 for global recognition. But like it's one of the most recognizable icons in the entire world is the Playboy Bunny.
That and the cross.
Okay. Maybe. I mean Pepsi and Coke and like all of those.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Have their own, but
yeah.
Did we do it?
I don't know. I feel like we didn't talk about like a lot of straight kids have their awakening when they find their first Playboy. Do gay guys have their first awakening when they find the Playboy and realize they're not into it? Or do gay guys have their awakening when they hear about this from other straight kids and then don't realize they don't care about it? Like, do we have our own kind of counterpoint to the straight awakening?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure, because so much of it, at least when I was a kid, so much of it is just furtive. Like, there was no internet. I couldn't like Pornhub wasn't a thing, right?
And, yeah.
I think that I saw it as a false hope. I sort of touched on that at the top of the show, but like I went through a pretty long period of time of being aware that I wasn't into girls, but I thought I was going to be. Like I just needed the right hormone to kick in and then I was going to be totes straight. And so this, like, I don't know, am I into these boobs now? Like as a way to test whether my hope of becoming straight someday was kicking in.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. I was definitely using it as a litmus of some sort and, it kept failing. So,
oh. yeah, I think we did it. Playboy's a lot gayer than I thought.
Playboy's a lot gayer than I thought. Yeah, absolutely. And still, I feel like we didn't talk about the bad parts enough. Maybe.
Oh, do we need to do more of that?
Well, I don't know. Like, I get caught up in this whole thing about like if somebody is super confident in their body and it's something that you can sell, and then they do. That's not necessarily exploitation. I think that it can be exploitative, but it doesn't mean that it is. It's the same thing in sex work, right? Like there's a lot of really terrible, awful, horrible human trafficking and abuse and exploitation that happens. But there's also a lot of just like super confident and like sex work is work and that's what they're doing. I don't know. I get caught up in all of that. Yeah. Sometimes, like, is porn a net positive for the universe?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Ooh. I also wonder who's profiting from it. Like, yeah. Are the women that are appearing in that also getting the money and recognition that they deserve? Who's making money behind the scenes? Are any women actually, you know, working at the editor's desk or, you know, like, just trying to figure out who profits from this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was Hugh's daughter that took over the company.
Oh, no way.
She Christy Hefner. She became head of the company in 1988.
Wow.
And, she didn't stop until, 2008. And, so she could focus on charity work. But yeah, Hugh like took a step back from like day-to-day operations stuff and his daughter like ran it for a long time.
Interesting.
And I think she was the one that was talking about like this need to pivot to make Gen Z happier. But anyway, sorry. Your point stands. The question of like, if you follow the money, who's getting the bulk of the money out of any sort of human endeavor?
Yeah.
And is being a billionaire on the backs or the boobs of all of these all of these women justifiable?
Right. Yeah.
I don't think billionaires are justifiable in any context, much less this one.
Agreed.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We did it.
Yeah, we did it. Just, sure.
Let's take a break and let's look at some tits.
Okay. Titty break.
Break.
This is the part where Mike and Kyle take a break.
Are we back?
We're back.
We're back.
We're going to do our gayest and straightest.
We're going to do our gayest and straightest, but first, our website is gayishpodcast.com.
We are a Facebook group. We have a Discord. We are on Instagram. You can find out all the places that you can follow us at gayishpodcast.com/contact.
Our hotline, you can send us text messages or leave us voicemails. It's 5855-GAYISH. That's 585-542-9474. Standard rates apply. I love it when people text the hotline and are like, is this the gayish hotline?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yes. Didn't know if this is a thing. Yeah, yeah it is.
Yeah. People read. I guess people listening to the back catalog could be like,
oh, do they still do it?
Do they still do it?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. Our email is gayishpodcast@gmail.com.
And our physical mailing address is Post Office Box 19882, Seattle, Washington, 98109.
Do you want to do our gayest and straightest?
Let's do our gayest and straightest.
I'll go.
Do it.
So my gayest is I bought a cute purple phone case for my phone.
Oh, where is
my
it?
My other one was falling apart, so I finally bought a brand new one.
Oh, okay. I like that. It's not that purple. It's like...
it's like a dark purple. Like a dark, it could be gayer, I guess.
No, it's great. I love it.
But yeah.
I'm doing this thing with my phone case of like, do I get a new case or do I get a new phone? And oh. I get a case for that new phone. I've had this bitch for a while.
I use my technology until I run it into the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
My straightest is playing the Mario.
Oh.
That you got me.
Mario 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Super Mario 3.
I loved that one.
Yeah, me too. You got me a little throwback system that lets you play a bunch of old retro games, and that's so I've been playing that one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely, my pleasure. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
And you also played Mortal Kombat, which I think is straighter.
That's true. That's very true. But like one of the older ones where before it got cool.
Yeah, when it was still bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so let's see. The straightest thing about me this week is a cop out. I read so much Playboy. Just for the articles, obvi, but
yep.
I read a lot of Playboy.
Yeah, wow.
And then the gayest thing about me this week was last night we got together for your birthday, and yeah. I was talking through the list of shots to potentially get you, and I told the bartender that I thought I was going to order you a blowjob, and he said, actually, it's called a cocksucker. And it was great.
Oh. But you ended up getting pineapple upside down?
Pineapple upside down cake, yeah. And then later a slippery nipple, which is a buttery nipple with sambuca in
it. Oh.
You seem to enjoy both.
So. I enjoyed both,
okay,
yes.
Great.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
We have a listener's gayest and straightest from a voicemail.
Yep, this is from A.E. Coleman.
A.E. Coleman? We know that bitch.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike, Kyle, and Derek. This is A.E. Coleman, and I'm finally calling in with my gayest and straightest. My straightest was this last week over spring break. A few of my friends and I got together. We had brewed some mead back in December, so we got together to finally bottle it, which that feels pretty straight by itself. But I may have gotten really, really, really drunk and challenged the chemistry professor to an arm wrestling match to see who owns my house. I suspect I challenged him because I like him as a person and think he's awesome, but I can't hug him because that would be gay. So that's my drunken hang up, not his. And internalized homophobia is why he now owns my house. So that was fun. My gayest would be in the D&D campaign I'm in with the same professor. My character is canonically straight, and the reason that is my gayest is that there's nothing gayer than pretending to be straight. So anyway, I hope you guys are doing great, and I will figure out how to get some of those bottles of mead out to Washington to you. Anyway, take care. Bye.
Oh, goodness. Hopefully it doesn't violate the Comstock Act to send us your mead.
See the Patreon segment for more details.
See the Patreon segment.
Yeah, thanks, A.E.
Thanks, A.E., and in pretending to be straight indeed.
Certainly.
I think D&D is an excellent way to explore all kinds of different things about identity.
Yeah, include I played a straight character before as well.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
That's it.
A thank you to the ghost of Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
But only the good parts.
Right. And fuck the other parts.
Yeah, fuck them.
Yeah. And I want to thank our super gap bridgers, Kaylee Adams, Kit Oliver, Kobe Gordon, Pip, Andrew Bugby, William Bryant, John Crowley, Stephen Porch, Yost Osel, Harry Shaw, Jonathan Montanez, Wadu, Forest Nail, Patrick Martin, Steve Douglas, Explosive Lasagna, Michael Covington, Just Jamie, Thomas B, Dusty Sands, A. Coleman, Chris Cachetorians, and Jerome York. Thank you for your support.
Thank you for your money. That's it. This has been Gayish from the Chris Cachetorian Studios. I'm Mike Johnson.
I'm Kyle Getz. Until next week, be butch, be fabulous, be you. See you next week.
See you next week, Playboy.
Bunny time. Bunny, bunny, bunny time. Bunny time in the city. Bunny time at night. I don't know.